It's in the poetry at the Word Cafe.
It's in the poetry. It's in the poetry.
Words plucked like fruit, then thrown away. Some may stay in lines spun like silk that tear and fray. Some may stay as stands a slow branch and grow to
at the Word Cafe.
Hello. Hello, it is in the poetry, isn't it? It's in the poetry, it's in the water, it's everywhere. Words. Now, apparently, most professional broadcasters are told when they're toddlers, don't eat chocolate before you broadcast, because it bungs up all your nose. So guess what? No, I didn't listen. Today, I've had the most delicious piece of chocolate cheesecake with Belgian chocolate and salted caramel. Anyway, hello, it's the Word Cafe on ice. I'm Julie Mullen and I'll be with you for 1 hour and a half of fabulous poetry. So I love poets. I love poets. I love poets. Does Roger McGough say that on BBC Radio 4? Does he start his programme like that? If he doesn't, he ought to. Today on the programme, we have coming up very soon, Tracy Gillies. And she's just round the corner from me, actually. And I shall be connecting with our Tracy because really, today on this show, we've got number four of the lockdown podcasts, which all came about because of our Trace and because of our Sarah at the Barrel House. More will be revealed. As the programme shotguns on, we've got on those podcasts, we've got the lovely Matt Harvey, who's our co-host. And we have Robert Garnham and Edward Tripp, although he changed his name, so I introduce someone completely different, but you'll get the picture. And then we're going to roll on like fortified turtles to the book launch. And today we've got fantastic poet Chrissy Banks. Yay! So we're all very excited about all of this. Oh, look, I'm rubbing my hands in glee. And then Mr. Robert Garnham, because he's jammy and he lives in Paignton, he's coming back on at 1 o'clock. One of his little pods, actually, and he's on a bus. So, and then to conclude this programme, it just wouldn't be the same if we didn't have Claire Morris. More about Claire later, but she's actually quite local. I'm just going to wave to her. I'm waving to you, Claire. I'm waving. Is Terry there? That's her husband. So we're going to connect with all these poets today and have a fabulous party, really. I think it's time I just got straight on with it. This is the bit. Oh, well, just actually to tell you, this is 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio. I forgot that bit, didn't I? That, you see, I've gone ditzy with my chocolate, what's it, flan thing. Yes, so it's Sound Art Radio on 102.5 FM. People listen all over the planet. I'm telling you, they really do. I'm just talking glibly like this because actually I'm trying to get... where am I looking? No, where have you gone? There you are. Tracy's going to do a poem for us. She is. Ooh. Here we are. I love this bit. It's so tense. Hello. Good morning, Tracy Gillies.
Good morning to you too. Are you wiping that chocolate cheesecake from off your chin?
I've got crumbs everywhere. Oh, yes, I'm afraid it was so utterly delicious. I even told Martin, I said, I've had some. It's gorgeous. So I'm sure he's been in the fridge getting a slice as well. Now, welcome to the programme. I was telling the lovely listeners across the planet and in Exeter, in Stoke Gabriel, well, wherever you are.
Is Exeter on the planet as well?
Yeah, it is. Well, it's just off the planet, but it's coming back on.
Right.
So about your sort of connection to the lockdown pods. So every week we go over this, but it's good because we have to remind the people out there that the Barrel House and you and Sarah are the good people who help poets. So thank you for being part of that, the whole process of this, and for being on the show today.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me yet again.
And I was absolutely gobsmacked that I did not know about Holly coming to Totnes.
I know, Holly McNish coming to the St Mary's Church, yes. Oh, that's going to be wonderful. I'm going to try and wangle it so I'm not roted onto work that day, and I'm going to get tickets for that gig. That's one not to miss. I can't remember the date now. I think I gave it to you last week, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. I think it was April, or maybe I'm making
April
that up.
April sometime.
Yeah, we'll check it out. Now, you're going to do a poem for us today. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with poetry.
Well, I was thinking about this, and I think actually, apart from these sort of early nursery rhymes you learn in preschool, it's probably my dad, Christopher Rokins, if you're out there listening, and he introduced me to poetry via the wonderful Spike Milligan.
Oh, yes.
And whenever you ask me to, I've done a poem before many moons ago on one of your shows, and you always think, oh, what shall I do? Shall I go for the sublime, sophisticated, esoteric, poignant, or the fun and frivolous? And I think Spike Milligan covers both, really.
I love Spike Milligan.
I've actually been greedy and I've picked two, but one of them's very short. So
go for it.
It sort of shows both sides, I think he had more than one side to his character.
Yeah.
And the first one is On the Ning Nang Nong. On the Ning Nang Nong, where the cows go bong and the monkeys all say boo, there's a Nong Nang Ning where the trees go ping and the teapots jibber jabber joo. On the Nong Nang Ning, all the mice go clang and you can't catch them when they do. So it's Ning Nang Nong, cows go bong, Nong Nang Ning, trees go ping, Nong Ning Nang, the mice go clang. What a noisy place to belong in the Ning Nang Ning Nang Nong.
Yay.
That sounds a little bit like my house, actually. It's very noisy in our house, so I think we sort of live on the Ning Nang Nong.
Yeah, I think you do.
And then the other one is sort of really the opposite end of the spectrum. It is a bit more thoughtful and poignant. And it's another Spike Milligan one. It's just simply entitled Me. And it's born screaming small into this world, living I am. Occupational therapy twixt birth and death. What was I before? What will I be next? What am I now? Cruel answer carried in the jesting mind of a careless God. I will not bend and grovel when I die. If he says my sins are myriad, I will ask why he made me so imperfect. And he will say, my chisels will blunt. And I will say, then why did you make so many of me?
Thank you so much.
I love that man. I love that
I man. Do. Seriously, I really, really do. And as you say, not just funny, but really strong emotional words of Spike Milligan.
Absolutely.
So thank you for being on our programme. And I'm going to kick
thank
off with Matt Harvey co-hosting and Robert Garnham. And we now call him Edward Tripp. So I hope you'll be listening.
Had a name change.
I know. Tune in, and but thank you every week for being on our show and kicking off the programme with me.
Thank you very much. Enjoy
loads of love.
Lovely programme, listeners. Speak to you soon, lovely one.
Bye. Bye, Tracy. Thank you. There we are. So a great start to the Word Cafe on 102.5 FM. Now, just to remind everyone, I'm on technical, so if anything goes awry, my lovely husband is next door listening on his headphones, and I'm sure someone else at Sound Art must be listening too, just in case I do something quite hilarious, or I don't know. I think it's time that we have a bit of a tune. Should we have a tune? Yes, I think we can't pretend. Oh, that's not in order.
I have wounds only you can mend. You can mend. Oh. I guess that's love. I can't pretend. I can't pretend. Oh, oh, oh.
a little bit of Tom Odell to get us in the mood for Robert Garnham and Matt Harvey and Edward Tripp. Actually, I'm just playing for time, aren't I? Because I'm going to try and line it up. Where are you? There you are. So, okay, are you ready for this?
Barrenhouse Podcast, supported by a bit of dosh from the Arts Council purse. A series of 7 jolly podcasts made with love, tenderness, and Matt Harvey.
Oh.
They're especially going out to our audiences who've been missing the Word Cafe, which used to happen once a month up at the Barrel House. So, hello to all of you.
Hello, hello.
I'm speaking as Matt Harvey, which is who I am. It's really nice to be included in Love, Tenderness and Matt Harvey. But I'd like to say that these things aren't necessarily separate. There's a Venn diagram. We all meet in the middle, just for the record. But it's very nice to be here with Rory and with Robert and yourself, Julie.
Thank you, for the record.
For the record. Can I start by, I'd either like to do a poem myself by way of setting the scene, or I'd like to introduce Robert, who I prepared an introduction for.
I'd love to hear a poem, please.
Yes,
okay. That's very kind of you all. Assuming that you're all consenting it. I didn't want to do some of the nonsense I've written during lockdown, but I've been revisiting some old stuff that I've hardly ever performed, and I came up with a poem called Cuddling with Humans, which, of course, you know, we're not encouraged to cuddle many humans. It's not safe. But a while ago in London, people started holding what they called cuddle parties, and I felt very uncomfortable about it, and I was unashamed in my lack of comfort. This is called Cuddling with Humans. Though the thought of no more cuddling is seriously troubling. When it comes to cuddle parties, I admit that I am struggling. I may well be modelly coddled in my own way, jolly muddled, and perhaps not fully cuddled, but I get the collywobble. So if you think I'll ever join the cuddle party, I think hardly. I am not a cuddle bug, nor am I a snuggle grub. But yes, we all need creature contact in a safe, consenting context to engage in creature antics far from thoughts of sin and syntax, but without a sexual subtext, don't we? We all need gentle jostling and snuggling and nuzzling, and any voice that says we don't, I think that voice needs muzzling. But because it's so embarrassing, the benefit's debatable. I'd rather people thought I was at home with an inflatable than at a cuddle party. I admire those who attend them for the humble path they've chosen, that of touchy-feely fellowship. It's called the road less frozen. They're just saying, don't I am hurting, please unthaw me. I'm just saying, I'm uncertain, please don't call me. Thank you for your approving voices. Now, the warm-up of the, you know, the over-the-top cuddling, which we're not really, I hope, all of us missing, you know, perhaps a little bit of extra contact that we would have had in other circumstances.
Definitely.
Oh, definitely. Anyway. So, Robert Garnham, performance poet and professor of whimsy. And this is your own words, Robert. He's a revved-up, raved-up, rocket-propelled, Poundland Pam-airs, a random, raunchy, rhyming, buy-one-get-one-free, bargain bucket Alan Bennett, professor of whimsy, humour of biscuits, spoken word artist and comedy poet, which I think pretty much says it all. I also want to add 2 books out with Burning Eye Nice and Zebra, or Zebra, depending on your politics. Wonderful spoken word shows that he takes to Edinburgh and tours. I think the new one, Spout, is touring. Well, it would be touring now, but it'll be touring.
It would be, yeah.
And I wanted to say that I'm really proud to have some words of praise on Robert's website. I said, Robert Garnham, what I love most about him is that he seems naive and childish enough to believe that poetry can be for the actual pleasure of the reader and the listener. And it goes on to say more, but I really stand by that. So it's really good to have you here, Robert.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, it's great to be here. Great to be doing something at all, really.
Yes, I know what you mean. So have you brought some poems along?
Or I have.
Shall we get you to make things up in the moment?
I have.
Yeah.
I've got.
Yeah, Robert's got to just make it up.
Well, what I've done, Regine's brother and I have done a poem swap. So 2 of my own and 1 of his.
Oh, cool.
And brilliant. If that's okay. Do you want me to do one for you?
Yeah.
For it. Excellent. Right. Well, the first poem I ever wrote was when I was about 5 years old. And I remember it because I was on the bus with my mum and I got on the bus and there was a school friend, and it was really weird because I wasn't used to seeing school friends anywhere other than at school. So I remember making up this really stupid poem, which was, "Whoa, bus, steady bus, 442, buses and coaches in the garage, there's so much to do." So that was when I was 5 years old. Great. And I've just got round to doing a sequel. So maybe in another 40 years' time, it'll be a trilogy. So this, actually, it's more of a song. It's got a chorus. You can join in if you like. It's called "The Lonely Bus Driver." I am the lonely bus driver, driving round the town. Always on the same old route, it really gets me down. I am the lonely bus driver, you don't know how I feel. The only thing that I caress is the steering wheel. I just drive, I just drive, I just drive my bus all day. I just drive, I just drive, I just drive my bus all day. I really like to drive my thing, I go the extra yard. I make it look quite easy, I assure you it's quite hard. I pulled up at a bus stop and a lady there did say, "I've never seen one as big as that, it's kind of tapered towards the end." I just drive, I just drive, I just drive my bus all day. I just drive, I just drive, I just drive my bus all day. I am the lonely bus driver, I often use the clutch. I drank a cup of coffee and I spilled it in my crutch. The wiper sweeping back and forth are powered by solenoids. And sitting here 8 hours a day has given me hemorrhoids. I just drive, I just drive, I just drive my bus all day. I just drive, I just drive, I just drive my bus all day. I recall my wedding day, it was my personal hell. She left me at the altar and she took the dog as well. I had to return the wedding gift, some people made a fuss. "That's all right," I said to them, "I've still got my bus." I just drive, I just drive, I just drive my bus all day. I just drive, I just drive, I just drive my bus all day. So if you catch the number 6, be sure to sit at the back. I often drive without my pants, it's something of a knack. I'll let you get on board my bus if you flash your pass. And then if you would like me to, I will flash my headlights. I just drive, I just drive, I just drive my bus all day. I just drive, I just drive, I just drive my bus all day. Thank you.
Oh, bravo.
Oh, bravo.
I wish I had one. That was combining genres there. English end of the pier folk song that becomes a beautiful country song. I just love it that he could lose his wife and his dog. Before the end. That was fantastic.
Double
entendre Decker, I wrote down.
Oh, dear. That's like therapy, Robert. Thank you. Oh, I laughed so much.
Fantastic.
Lovely images also just left in my mind, so thank you for that.
Yeah, so do you want me to do another one?
Yeah, please.
Okie dokie. Right, this was written by Roisin's brother. I'll go straight into it.
Okay.
"Come and look. Come and look at the one-armed man who lives in the windmill. Perhaps he stood too close to the windmill," I say to the woman beside me. She smiles oddly. The man with one arm stares back. He does not seem to see us. His children stare down from their bedroom window. The glass in the window is broken. They must be so cold. They must be so cold, I say to the woman beside me, who stares forward, ignoring me this time. I see the wife of the one-armed man. She's removing her shopping from the boot of the family car, but she does not see me either, because she is looking up at her children, smiling She has been standing still beside the car for a very long time. I know she's been standing still for a long time because moss is growing on the backs of her legs. Moss is growing on the backs of her legs. And a patch of lichen is growing on her back. Suddenly, a crow lands in the family garden. A crow. But why is the crow so big? I ask the woman beside me. But the woman is no longer beside me. The woman is running away. The woman is running, and the crow is big. The crow is huge. The crow is huge. The crow is bigger than the windmill family's car. The crow is bigger than the car. Maybe it was the crow that took the man's arm. The crow is bigger than the car. The crow is bigger than the car. The crow is bigger than the car. But the family keeps smiling. I run after the woman, and everyone else keeps completely still. And the title of that poem is A Day Trip with My Wife to Babbacombe Model Village.
Fantastic. Well read.
Genius.
It really needed a lot of commitment in the performance. You gave it the full commitment, which... having seen Rashid's brother perform, I know the level of commitment that it takes.
Yes, it's just amazing words. So it's not easy to perform, obviously, but the words are just wonderful, and I just love that poem.
Absolutely amazing. Oh,
that's true.
Well, it's my turn to intro Roisin's brother, actually. Well, you've heard a little bit of him. He's going to do some stuff. Some stuff is definitely going to happen, and it's going to be really weird.
No.
I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know even. I don't even know his name. He won't share his email address with me. I don't know what's going to happen.
Can I just say, I did ask because I'm trying to set up a website, and I did ask someone. I've been asking a few people if they could provide me with quotes to give a bit of mood for the website. And someone emailed me yesterday with a quote, and I don't know how to take this. They described me as the David Cameron of poetry, in the sense that I do stuff and sometimes it offends people, but at the end, I just walk away. And then he went on to say, and he's like David Cameron also in the sense that when he does walk away, there is a 50-50 chance that he might have highly ritualized sex with a dead pig. Not help.
That's a great quote. They've put a lot of work into it.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Thank you, Matt.
The quote is half full for me, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, I've got two, like Robert, I've got two things to share. One is something that I've written and performed recently. And in fact, Matt has witnessed this. Sorry, Matt. The reason I wanted to perform this again, and excuse the shameless plug, but this particular piece has been professionally filmed as part of the Spork Up bursary and will be launched in a special screening next week.
Wow.
Which I'm very, very proud to be involved in, December 14th, 7 p.m. If you look at Spork, you'll find the intro. But I thought, well, if you hear it, you might want to look at the video. I was selected by three other people, and I'm just really, really proud to be involved. So what I'm going to do is perform that and then do the swap and do a poem that Robert shared with me. Now, this poem is called Lockdown Mockbeard, and it was written because during lockdown, I know it became very fashionable for people to grow beards, but I already had a beard, so I just grew my beard more. And when I grew my beard more, frankly, my whole world fell apart and there was a very complicated issue of mistaken identity, which I will illustrate now in the poem. This poem is so traumatic, it actually starts as a shanty. Hopefully, it will then all make sense. This is Lockdown Mockbeard. What do you do with a lockdown mock beard? Sit on the swings in the park and look weird. It's going to take a while to have my name cleared. If only I'd worn trousers. So now I live in a squat with the tramp old Andy. We eat beef and drink warm shandy. I sterilise my tooth in stolen brandy. My court case is in 6 weeks. There's nothing worse than the smell that lingers from eating sardines from a tin with your fingers. Oily fingers makes it difficult to swipe on Tinder. Yes, my wife has left me. I pretend to be a pirate and climb the sailmast. I toast my fellow pirates with a gin-filled hip flask, but when my drunken haze has then passed, I realise I've climbed a lamppost. A lamppost. I've actually climbed a lamppost. A lamppost. A lamppost. A lamppost beside a playground. The cheering pirates were actually screaming children, and now I'm electronically tagged again. My drunk friend Andy starts to slouch, so I heave him onto the broken couch and steal the LSD from his secret drug pouch to take a trip to the 90s. Time travel feels better when you add barbiturates. If that's a problem, yo, I'll solve it. Check out the hook where my DJ revolves it. Ice, ice, baby. What happens next occurs in flashback. I'm running through a forest like a hairy Sasquatch. I stumble on a couple having sex in a hatchback. Holden Woods is scary, allegedly. Time travel feels better when you add barbiturates. If that's a problem, yo, I'll solve it. I know I said this already in verse 6, but time travel screws with your brain. With no more money, I go full hipster and start making money as a woke barista. Apparently, my beard is hip in Bristol. I apply for jobs in Gloucester. I get a new job, but it clashes with my court date. And I'm very surprised when I recognise the magistrate. Last time I saw him, he was lying prostrate, chagging in a hatchback. Needless to say, the trial was easy. My tag was removed and the magistrate freed me. He offered me a lift by means of apology, and I wish I'd said no. When the drugs wore off and I finally came to, I was in the judge's car with his naked wife, Sue. She told me we were going to a Holden barbecue. Or maybe she didn't say barbecue. Maybe she said spit roast. As I lay on the leaves, I try to forget my pain and my shame and my rage and my debt, but one single phrase summarized my regret. That phrase was this: Gillette is the best that a man can get. Gillette is the best that a man can get. Gillette is the best that a man can get. Gillette is the best that a man can get. Gillette is the best that a man can get. Gillette is the best that a man can get. Gillette is the best that a man can get. Gillette is the best that a man can get. The thing is, if it's a hot day and you decide to remove your trousers, knowing full well that you're wearing a pair of boxer briefs that look like shorts, what's the problem with that? What is the problem with that? Thank you.
Whoa, bravo.
The problem with that.
Yeah. Well done, Rory.
That had so many levels to it.
Certainly did.
Yeah. Also, that euphemism, a Holden barbecue. Yes. I mean, yeah, that I can see that catching on. Yeah. I'm not even saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying
it's just a thing. That's fine. I get that a lot.
Excellent stuff. Have you got more?
I've got the poem that I'm going to perform, which is written by Robert, and it's called Fozzy. I spent a night of passion with Fozzy Bear from The Muppet Show. The whole encounter was surprisingly erotic. At sensitive and pleasurable moments, he had a habit of suddenly shouting, "Waka, waka, waka," which kind of took the shine off things. He kept his hat on the whole time. He ate all the honey. He kept giving me bear hugs. He marked out his territory all over the living room. He mauled the postman. He was a surprisingly good kisser. We chatted about philosophy, and he told me his belief that he was being controlled at times by unseen hands. I told him my Uncle Sid owned a trilby, just the same as his. Fozzie asked if Uncle Sid was a Muppet, and I said no. He worked for the gas board. And then Fozzie said, "You know those two old men? Those two old men who used to heckle me all the time. Do you remember them? All that heckling they did? They're dead now, the pair of them. Dead and buried." "So," I said, "you had the last laugh." "Not really," he replied. You should see the abuse I get on Twitter. I changed the subject back to Uncle Sid. The lights off, he became tender and loving. He ran his fluffy fingers through my hair and told me that he'd not felt like this since a failed romance with the Swedish chef. He took off his polka dot bow tie and knotted it round my wrists. I found it strangely erotic. "Do you want to wear the hat?" he asked. "No, thanks," I replied, put off by sudden visions of Uncle Sid. "Wear it," he said. "Wear it. Wear it. Wear the hat. Go on. Put the hat on. Put the hat on. Put it on. Wear it. I want you to wear the hat. I want you to wear the hat. I want you to wear the hat. Put it on. Put the hat on. Put it on, bad boy. Wear it, bad boy. Wear it, stud muffin. Wear it, you tart. Wear it, you tart. Wear the hat. Wear the hat. Wear the hat. Just wear the bloody hat. I put it on. And he whacka whacka whacked. He left before the night was over. He stole my wallet. Thank you.
I think a double act has been born.
It was so good. You both read each other's work so well. It was.
You really did.
You took on challenging pieces and put, you know, I was going to say you pulled them off. And everything I'm going to say is going to sound wrong. But bravo. I love that.
Really, really fantastic. And you know what? We've run out of time, gang. We've had a great time.
We have loved.
That's lovely.
Loved having you in the Barrel House podcast.
You've been terrific. All of you, and I can't wait to see you in real life again.
Oh, bless you. Likewise, you guys. Thank you very much.
And that was the Lockdown Podcasts. For you to kick off the Word Cafe on 102.5 FM, this is Julie Mullen. Now, thank you to the gang Matt Harvey for co-presenting that. Also thanks to Billy Elliott, the series editor, and music by Wax Machine. So we're coming up to the time that we're going to be connecting with Chrissy Banks, but let's have a little bit of music to get us in the mood, and I shall let you sort of, in on some information about Chrissy Banks. Ooh. So Chrissy Banks, poet, was born in the Isle of Man, but now lives and writes in Exeter. She co-hosts Exeter's Uncut Poets with Alistair Patterson. She's been writing poetry for years and years, retiring from work as a psychodynamic counsellor about 6 years ago to spend more time writing. Her second collection, The Uninvited, came out in 2019 from Indigo Dreams. In this book, the unexpected enters in various ways, both welcome and unwelcome. Sue Boyle called it a grippingly Moorish book. And today, Chrissy Banks will share her pamphlet as well, some poems from that, a pamphlet called Frank, which was published by The Poetry Business in May 2021. And like The Uninvited, Frank focuses on individuals and relationships with humour, serious reflection, and a certain frankness. Catherine Maris speaks of these poems as being entertaining, well-made and often profound. And poet Fiona Benson says, "These poems are acutely attentive to both toughness and tenderness, to withholding and to noisy, snotty grief. I'm enthralled by their many reckonings, which conjure in me an enormous yes of recognition." So, that's the brief. You've been briefed. So let's get the poet on the blower. There we are. I'm just going to stop the music and bring you on to the programme. Chrissy Banks, poet in Exeter, welcome to the Word Cafe 102.5 FM. Thank you for joining us on book launch. We are delighted that you're here.
Hello, Julie. Hello. Well, I'm delighted to be here.
So, thank you so much for the intro. So I read that out to everybody. So really what we normally do is I just get you to put yourself at the Barrel House in Totnes with those fantastically theatrical red velvet curtains as your backdrop. And I hand you over to the stage, to the audience, to the microphone. And I just say, ladies and gentlemen, this is poet Chrissy Banks, and then I leave you to it. Is that all right? I'll go and eat a piece of cake.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm still listening. Off you go.
Okay. Oh, well, lovely to be here and to be with you, wonderful audience. I'm just going to read a few poems, first of all, from The Uninvited and then from my latest pamphlet, Frank. The Uninvited, I have to say, has already had a launch. It came out in 2019, but soon after lockdown happened, and like so many books, it kind of didn't get the airing I'd have liked it to get, I suppose. So nice to be able to read a couple of things from it today. This first poem is called November 22nd, 1963. And if that date doesn't mean anything to you, then I hope eventually it will. And just to explain, if you probably have heard of Jackson Pollock, but just in case you haven't, he was that abstract artist who produced canvases that look like someone has vomited paint onto them. November the 22nd, 1963. Already that morning, I'd glared three times in the charm-free mirror that hung skew-whiff over the mantelpiece. Chickenpox had made a Jackson Pollock of my face. Soon my skin would be all scratched off. No school. The finger of exile had painted to our back room where the telly jabbered away. Meanwhile, rumours of simmering stew leaked from the kitchen, my mother on percussive saucepans behind again, clanging. The coal fire shiffled and ticked. A car in Dallas sleeks across the screen. Jackie with black magic hair and ice cream smile. Her husband polished to a sheen. Crinkly eyes. The crowd goes mental as they pass. But now what's going on? A cameraman lurches. The president slumped in his wife's blood-mottled lap as she begs us to look away. Cradling a newborn tragedy to lay in my mother's arms, I fly to the kitchen. But the death of the just-bloomed president of the USA is not enough to break the martyr's long watch at the altar of the oven, not enough to change again the interrupted features of her what-now face. I could feel it then, a new skin forming, tight enough to hold my own ramshackle self, but soft and permeable like bandage, so that the world could come bleeding through. Did that sound okay, Julie?
Really, really powerful. Thank okay. you for that poem.
I'm just checking because I'm
Thank
kind
you
of
for that.
Balancing phone and glasses yeah. and hoping my hearing aids aren't whistling and all
no,
that kind
all
of stuff.
All is good. Very, very strong. Yeah.
All right. So the next poem, also from The Uninvited, is called The Sex Lives of Paperclips. And it's one of those poems you start writing and you don't know where you're going with it, really, but it sort of announces itself in the end. It's a poem about relationships. He drew my attention to paperclips, their furtive encounters, their magic tricks. How does inanimate stuff like this secretly manage to shift and hitch? Necklaces left in a fastened box end up coiled in unravelable knots in a menage a trois with a silver cross and dangly earrings or bracelet watch. I'm starting to notice it everywhere, the toothy kiss of some forks ensnared, post-tumble tights and a sweater, the pair in a Velcro clinch on a bedroom chair. But if it's a crackle of static that smacks us together, what holds over time is the mass of poppers and studs, the clasp and the catch. A hook pulls away and an eye pulls back. And then last of all, for The Uninvited, I'm going to read the title poem, The Uninvited. And just to tell you that the poem speaks about a creature, but it doesn't actually name the creature. It just says the thing. So you might like to just imagine your own least favourite creature and substitute it there. The Uninvited. We flew to a country of golden temples, golden Buddhas 6 times as tall as a man. But now, here's what I think about most. Garden lodge, petal-strewn bed, bowl of fruit on a table, banana skin, partially stripped, flesh well-chomped, not by us, too munched for a mouse. I ransacked cupboards, peered under chairs, searched for a hole, a gap, a crack, big enough. Had I left a window open, a door unlatched? Someone delivered a metal cage, banana baited. At first, not a squeak. Then I woke to a maniac rattling of bars. The thing and I stared at each other. Fingery claws, breathing fur, the naked flecks of its tail, those eyes onyx black. I could just about watch as it shivered there in the cage. But when it was gone, it was still here in a sealed wooden house. Me and the creature, all one, according to Buddha. What lives in shadow is always seeking a gap. And I'm going to go on now to read some poems from Frank. This is published by the Poetry Business. And the first poem is called Cicada Love Song. And Julie, I really think you should be reading this poem. It needs someone with a nice low, sexy voice, and I think you do it really well.
Ooh.
But I haven't sent it to you, so it's going to have to be me.
You've got a good, sexy voice too, madam.
It's a little husky at the moment because I'm all congested.
Oh, are you? Yeah, yeah, it's a lot going around.
Cicada love song. And just to say that there's a little bit of sort of technical cicada terminology in here. The timbals are what they use to make that incredible noise they make. And the noise is called stridulation. And this poem kind of pays tribute to the power of sound to take you back to particular times or places. Like lads who congregate in squares of French or Spanish villages, like men grouped at a table outside an Italian bar, you and the cicada boys hang out to flex your timbals and flick your wings, build your trance and techno buzz to rev up any female for a mile around. Hot pink hibiscus, bougainvillea, and yours the persistent soundtrack to all our lazy holidays. The hotter the sun, the louder the stridulation, your vibrations, the escalating thrum of how it was to be young, thirst never quenched, heat like a hungry kiss on the skin. And from that to a poem called Viewpoint, which is, what I was thinking about this poem is that when you go out in search of beauty or something spiritual or indeed something that you can write a poem about, quite often it's disappointing, or for me anyway, it's not a good idea. It's much better when you come across something unexpectedly. And you don't always, you know, when you go in search, you don't always find something good to write about or something to be uplifting. So that's what this is about. Viewpoint. Some days, a walk in the woods, a look at the lake, flashes a mirror into another dimension, dazzles me. Then I might almost let myself think, this isn't everything. Today, rain muddies the track, dribbles through trees, the lake turns in on itself. Someone else may make a myth or a slice of heaven from this, but that brown dog flying between bank and water is no more Pegasus than the silver torso of a downed birch is a fallen god. Some days, trees are just trees. Mud is mud. Possibly a lack of imagination on my part. So I'm going to move on to a short poem called I'm on Page 3, which might not be quite what I'm suggesting it is. This is really kind of like my person from Porlock moment. I have quite a few of those. But this person from Porlock was my husband interrupting some work I was trying to do on the laptop. And it's also kind of an example of what it's like for a writer living with someone who's a non-writer or non-artist and actually quite practical person. And similarly, you know, the difficulties of a non-artist living with someone who's needing to be solitary a lot of the time. I'm on page three. I'm on page three of the piece about Plath's bee poems, a feminist analysis. He walks in, looks at the computer screen, asks me to come and hold the ladder. I know he will do the job, whether I help him or not. The chainsaw, the wobbly ladder, no threat will stop him from acting now. I leave my room, follow him out. I study the ladder. He wields the saw, while my head fills with an insistent, furious buzzing. Okay, so I think I've probably got time for two more.
Okay.
Two more, so okay,
yeah.
Judy.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine, Chrissy. Thank
you. All right. So, I've just got to find... Sorry, I've just got to do the fumble while I find... Oh, I'll read this one. So this is actually probably the only poem in the book, or one of the few poems in the book. It's a pamphlet rather than a full book. Mm-hmm. That I wrote in lockdown, during lockdown, and it's called The Nearly Times, and it's thinking about... it's thinking about those times when, you know, had things been a little, had the close calls been a little closer, I might not still be here. Mm. I'm kind of feeling thankful that I am. The Nearly Times. Once, when a group of horses bolted and reared, eyes white, legs flailing, trampling whatever was under their hooves. Once, wheeling too fast on a bike down Richmond Hill, tumbling off, stilled on the tarmac, a human speed bump. Once, when a guy drove us into a lamppost, chin gashed, hand crushed, broken wrist, soon healed, though I still have the scars. Mostly I've been careful or lucky or both, but once I pulled out in the path of another car and once clipped the side of a thundering truck. I bless Sheldon Kaplan, who invented the EpiPen. Once I passed out at a party and wasn't drunk. Everything went dark. I was blind till I honked. How many lives is that? How many chances? How many years was I handed to learn how to live every day, how to give thanks?
Thank you.
And lastly,
that.
I'm just going to read the title poem, Frank.
Great.
Frank was a real person I met a very long time ago when I came to university in Exeter. As it happened, where I'm now living after a long time away from it. The poem mentions that we were Northern aliens, and it really did feel like that, like everybody in the university, except for me and Frank, were from the South and were from probably middle or upper class backgrounds. They all sounded very posh anyway. So this is Frank. In that very southern university, we were northern aliens, experiments in academia, mad in love with literature, first in the family to win a place. Winter or summer, he shrugged thin arms into a khaki parka. His hooked nose poked from a face pale as bleach flower. He kissed me once in Anglo-Saxon, rough and slobbery. Frank couldn't do with borrowed thought. When he spat words straight from the seam, hard and black, his tutor's eyes lit up. He didn't give a toss if they agreed or not. Analyzing Hamlet, He's fucking fucked. Evaluating Wordsworth. That bloke wins first prize for turning kids off poetry. Rattling off his own deranged and genius critique of Hemingway, he gulped and scrawled himself a first. The last I heard, he'd won a scholarship, soared off to be Frank in New York, while I wondered what it meant to graduate. What I'm thinking now, too late, is this. I could have learned a lot from Frank. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chrissy Banks. I absolutely loved your poems. Really, really strong, really brilliantly. Just your words, the language you use, and the poem about the nearly times, it's just really got me going. It was so yeah, close to sort of lots of different times in my life. But most of all, I think I fell in love with Frank, actually.
Oh, everyone falls in love with Frank.
So just tell the listening audience, the poets out there, the people who are tuning in to Sound Art Radio on 102.5, how can they get hold of your books, your pamphlet and your book?
They can get hold of my books either through me on my Facebook page or through the Poetry Business. So if you go to the Poetry Business website, I think it's poetrybusiness.com, something like that.
Okay, brilliant.
It's there.
Wonderful.
And thank you, Judy, so much.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I really enjoyed your poetry, Chrissy, and all the very best. And I hope you get better, because it sounds like you have got a bit of a... Yes, I too have got that germ. So both of us are croaking away. Anyway, thank you so much for being on the programme. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was poet Chrissy Banks from Exeter. Really enjoyed all of her poems. They were really strong and she read them fantastically. So we are moving on a little bit. Let's, before we get Robert Garnham, who, you see, he's so jammy, that Robert Garnham in Paignton. He's wangled two opportunities today. Usually he's just got the one at 1 o'clock. But today, because he was part of the lockdown poets, do you see how they are, these poets? Let's have about a little bit about the arts and the hours while we position ourselves for Robert on a bus. Exciting to know so many local poets, and you know, if you're out there and you want to connect with poetry in the Devon area, you know, just go online. There's the Dead Beats poets in Plymouth and Poetry Uncut in Exeter. I'm not quite sure if everything is revving forward yet. Certainly Spork have been doing a number of gigs in Exeter at the theatre there. And also they've been at the Barrel House here in Totnes. So if you've just tuned in, this is 102.5 FM, Sound Art Radio. This is The Word Cafe, and I'm Julie Mullen. Thank you for being with me. Now let us get a little bit of the bus. I think we need Robert on the bus, don't we? Robert, are you on the bus? Are you? Robert, are you there? Are you on the bus? There he is.
Hello there. This is Robert Garnham, Professor of Whimsy. So join me this afternoon as I'm standing here waiting for the bus. Yes, I am at a bus stop. And I tell you, my life doesn't get any more exciting than that these days. So yes, I'm next to the main road and waiting for the bus over to a meeting in Brixham, in which we are going to discuss something incredibly artistic, and I'll probably just sit in the corner trying to make the occasional wisecrack, which is, I think, the only reason they have me along. I was on a bus the other day, actually, and I was sitting there, and I was thinking, as you do, why the hell has the bloke in front of me got Tippex on his ear? I don't know how that happened. And it's one of those little mysteries which I'll hopefully get along to. Is this... Oh, no. No, it's not my bus. So that's what I was thinking the other day. In fact, just before I started recording this, an ambulance went past with flashing lights and the old siren and everything. And it made me think of my dad, because whenever we go driving anywhere and an ambulance would go past, he'd always say, "Ambulance!" And we'd all laugh. I don't know why. I think just because he said it every bloody time. Just like every time he saw a police car, he'd always go, "POL1CE." And again, we'd all laugh. Anyway, my dad passed away a couple of years ago, and I got a lift one day from my uncle, who is my dad's twin brother. And an ambulance came towards us, and my uncle said, "Ambulance!" And I thought, what the hell's going on here? So anyway, no, that's not my bus. Nope. Anyway, I thought I'd just do a quick poem for you. Doesn't have a title yet. It's just called Poem. My aunt had a downstairs loo, and one in the bathroom too. She used to say to my sister and me, "Don't flush both at once when you're having a wee, because if you do, there'll be an explosion." This stayed with me all my life. Last year, I stayed in a seaside B&B, and just as I'd finished having a pee, I flushed the same time as the person in the room above me. And was there an explosion? Well, I'm here to tell the tale, aren't I? So yes, that was a true story, and featured my aunt there, who is my dad's sister. Okay, so there you go. You've had a bit of family from me, a bit of whimsy, and I tell you what, just got to go. My bus is coming now. So this has been Robert Garnham signing off. Thank you for flying with me.
Thank you, Robert Garnham. Thank you for taking us on a bus ride to, well, where were we going? Brixton. Yeah, somewhere like that. So the programme is not over. It's never over until Claire Morris gets her poetry grip on us. And she's out there in the local environs. I won't say where she lives, just in case you stalk her. But we met each other at Spork at the Barrel House. She has a dog called Woody. He's gorgeous. And a husband called Terry. I'm sure he's gorgeous too. Anyway, at 1:10, Claire is coming on the air. It's true, everybody. Come on. Let's dance. Right, we'll have a little bit of this before we bring Claire on. A little bit of music. A bit of sade. I think I play this every week. I must be addicted.
Thank you.
Now, before we bring on Claire, I just want to flag up to our lovely listening audiences that if you wanted to buy the books, that the pamphlet and the book, as performed by Chrissy Banks, you can actually go to her website. That's chrissybankspoetry.com, and that's C-H-R-I-S-S-Y Banks. And you can also get The Uninvited from Indigo Dreams. So just to clarify that. So let's have that moment. We've all been... Oh, I managed to cut myself off. I tell you, never leave me in charge of technical. That moment is coming. It cometh that we get Claire Morris. She actually had us in fits of laughter at the Barrel House Spork. She was part of the poetry programme that night. So let us curtail the music a little and make connection. Let's do the connection thing. Oh, no, that's the wrong one. Oh, you see, I tell you, never leave me in charge of anything. Right, okay, there we are. No, right number coming up. That was probably my Auntie Lily. Hello, Claire Morris.
Hello, Julie.
I just managed
Thank
to call.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I managed to call someone else completely instead of you. That's okay. That's the sort of thing that I do, the madness that is the Word Cafe on Sound Art. I'm delighted that you agreed to be on the programme. Last time I saw you was at the Barrel House at Spork, where you were part of the competition there. How did that go for you?
What do they say? Every day a school day. I was just confused about having to choose a colour.
I thought it had all to do
with the covering we had to put on our microphones. So when I was told to choose a colour, I said yellow. And of course, there weren't any cards that were yellow. And I could see Chris was looking at me as if to say, yellow? There are no yellow cards. So anyway, so that's what I mean. It was a bit of a learning,
You like to keep the audience on their toes. That was all that was about. So that was brilliant.
Anyway, yeah, it was great fun though.
Now I know you've had some lovely poetry news, and I thought you might want to share it with everyone out there.
Should I do that now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was, I entered the Corsham Storytown Poetry Competition, and the focus was telling stories, and my poem was awarded runner-up.
Wow, congratulations.
Which was wonderful. I was thrilled.
Here's a little bit of music for that. See, that's what we do when we... that's the success music. Well done. Are you a person that enters a lot of poetry competitions?
No, I'm not, I must admit. The thing that attracted me particularly to the Corsham Storytown competition, apart from the fact that it was organised by Dawn Gorham, someone I really admire, was that it was free. And you know what it's like with poetry competitions? You say, oh, this looks really interesting. And you look at the price of entry and you think, well, you know, can I really afford to enter or not? So, you know, it's wonderful when you have organisations who are aware of the pressures of those who are unwaged, put it
exactly
that way.
No, that's really well said, actually. I mean, obviously, some of the competitions, yeah, I mean, it's just a known thing that you pay your fiver or whatever it is, £4, and you proceed. But you're absolutely right. Not everyone has, you know, as you say, no, not everyone is working, and some people are unwaged. So, yeah, but it's a good point.
But, I mean, I would say, in addition to that, that obviously I understand that with entry fees, they are there to sort of support the competition anyway, and to create the prizes. So I'm not criticising that. I'm just saying it's a fact, particularly with with a number of writers being unwaged, they have this kind of juggling act, really, to consider. But I always go in for the National Poetry Competition and things like that. But, you know, this was one that...
winked at you.
I entered at the end of last year.
Brilliant. So, well done anyway, for that. And just to sort of get a little bit, so I've been sort of flagging up that you're a local poet. Do you get you know, obviously pre-lockdown, did you get out to all the poetry performance nights, or were you a part of that? Uncut poets?
Not really. I wasn't, actually, the curious thing was that I wasn't aware of the thriving scene that we've got around here until lockdown, because I joined a group called Forsaking the Mic, run by Tim King.
Oh, yeah.
And through that, I then started networking with other local poets. And from that, I then also discovered about the Barrel House.
Yes.
Because I can remember I met you walking up the road to the Barrel House, because I didn't know where it was, and
how funny.
You were striding up the road and you said, just up this way. And so actually it's because of Zoom, because of lockdown, that I have become more aware of the wonderful network of poets that we have in this area.
Yeah.
It's terrific, absolutely terrific. It's really thriving.
As you say, yeah, very much so. Now, we've got to get down to the business of you and your words, and we're really looking forward to hearing some poems. So do you fancy doing sort of three back-to-back to start off with?
Yeah,
is that a good idea?
I'll do that.
Yeah.
Well, I'll start off with the one that was awarded the prize. It's a prose poem. It's called Ronnie Plays Jazz, and it's all about the time I saw and heard Ronnie Scott playing live and the effect it had on me. Ronnie Plays Jazz. It must have been November, because the mist coiled skywards with a slink of slow time, and Oscar and his boys were already there because they'd headed in on the night train, and Ed had his brushes out, dusting the sky and the sea, replying, ba-doosh, doosh, 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 ba-doosh, doosh, doosh, doosh. And then the traffic taking up that single note, da-da, 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 da 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 da, and I'm listening to those staccato sounds swirling around in the gold of my whiskey and dry, because I've tried it neat, but my throat can't take it. And anyway, it's compound time I need now. I'll take my blues sea jam, please. And the pavements outside are still slick with the afternoon's rain, but inside it's dark. A single spotlight with a house band playing. And someone, all beret and polo neck, is smoking and finger clicking and nodding like it's obligatory somehow. And I'm thinking, no, that's not the story here. And then he's just there, dressed in black, neck chain gold like his sacks, and he sits on the side of the stage and places his cigarette precisely in the holder at the bottom, you know, by the side keys. And I'm watching that smoke swirl and breathing and watching and listening and breathing and watching and listening. And he plays. He plays. And each note ascending like incense. Yeah, like a prayer. And Ronnie, Ronnie, I'm here. But he keeps playing until the notes don't matter, because my ears are full of sound. And he stands and leaves. And I think, and no, I don't know what to think. And I look outside, and I know it must be November, because the mist coils skywards with a slink of slow time.
Wow. Yeah. That was absolutely brilliant. Well done.
Okay.
I can see why that was so strong in that poetry competition. It's brilliant. Thank you, Claire. Thank
you. Okay, so the next one I'm going to read is the inspiration is really from the countryside around me. We've got a family of three buzzards that live in the woods nearby, and it's always a joy to see them circling in the sky. And here's a poem about them. It's called Still. Three buzzards crisscross clear September skies, distant yearnings of another world. Peel, peel, peel. Cushioned on thermals that lift them higher and higher, they soar in secret semaphore. Somewhere down below at Millpool's edge, bristling with the click and clatter of camera lens, camping chairs and coffee cups, the day refocuses, unfolds, makes ready, busy with the hum of expectation and enterprise, all to welcome the celebrity billing, an osprey pair in speedy sojourn before seeking winter sun. Duty tells me I should be there to share in such a premiere, but something more besides suggests I stay, willing captive to my common trio, wings as big as the air that holds them. Peel, 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 pouring out the day's care in loving libation. Peel, 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 weaving in and out in homespun accord. And still I hear them. And still the afternoon. Pew, pew, pew. There, that's it.
So much musicality in your poetry.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. What I thought I'd do now, I think have I got time for two more?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, brilliant. This one is a sonnet, and it's called Bloomsday in Andalusia. And I thought I'd share a sonnet because, of course, there was the great news yesterday that Hannah Lowe's sonnet selection, The Kids, was awarded the Costa Prize. So this is in Hannah Lowe's honour. But anyway, this is set in Andalusia, where I lived for about 15 years. Bloomsday in Andalusia. Noonday, June day, heat hounds my shadow, wrapped captive to these dead beat sleeping dog days. Contrails strum uncertain chords on broken strings, notes vanishing into distant haze. Insistent sweat prickles, trickles, salty streams down skin unseasoned, pinkly pale. Sun, jade, shade, greenly, ushering me to view her avocado's roots that spread and run, tunneling in secret communion. Ragged heads droop resigned, hushed and blushing at daydreams of skirts, zephyr-filled, fickle, tickled by wind's promise, gushing, rushing, whispering lies through banana frond fans, dance the romance of summer's saraband. Ooh. And then I'll take you on a journey from Andalusia to the East Midlands. A lot of my poems celebrate the environment, and it doesn't just have to be the natural environment, it can be the built environment too. And Leicester has been, which is the focus of this poem, has been has featured in my life quite a lot, really, because that was where my husband Terry was born. And also Nigel Bird, an artist that I'm collaborating with, and our pamphlet is coming out at the end of this week.
Oh, brilliant.
He comes from there as well. I thought I'd read this in honour of them, and it's celebrating Leicester. Okay, here goes. Listen, let me tell you about Leicester. And I'll tell you about our loyalty with our hopeful match day scarves hoisted high in swathes of blue and white or green and red as foxes and tigers prowl, and our all-weather archaeologists digging deep in a cheerless car park on knees before our longed-for king. And I'll tell you about our literature. And that ruffian Joe waiting to entertain us on the stair with Mr. Sloan. And Sue with her fractions and her secrets and their word wit that sparkles in unlikely places. And I'll tell you about our language as we go down Paggy Savo with Tezza, Bezza and Shazza. And if you tell us who worry we in, we might let you come along too, Duck. And I'll tell you about our light and our street lamps, Diwali dreaming, alive with sudden illumination, warm as egg yolks as they pool their wares in Sainsbury's puddles, waiting for another Melton Road dawn. And I'll tell you about our love and our Saturday night serenading at the Palais de Dance, where Mum met Dad and knew that she'd found home.
Wow. Absolutely wonderful, Claire. Tell me, finally, about your pamphlet. So this is a collaboration with an artist from Leicester. And tell me the name of the pamphlet and how it's been.
The pamphlet is called There, and Nigel Bird is an abstract artist. He works in black and white. And there's something I find very invigorating about his work. Anyway, he and I worked at the same school, and we always thought it would be wonderful to create a pamphlet together where we looked at the process of inspiration. So and whether it's possible for words and images to meld. And so that's why the pamphlet is called There, because we're trying to find that point there where inspiration happens. So anyway, it's I'm thrilled that we're able to create something like that. And it's coming out, tomorrow.
So, congratulations. Isn't that amazing timing that you're on Sound Art Radio talking about this? Congratulations to both of you. And how would people get hold of this pamphlet?
Well, really, what we're doing is we're hoping to raise some money for the MS Society as well. So if people want to contact me through my Facebook page, then I'll send a message back to them. And if they want to do that, we'd be so thrilled. That would be wonderful. We're charging £5 for it anyway.
Fantastic.
Thank you for asking me.
Well, thank you so much for being on the programme today, Claire. You've set me now. I'm complete with you and Chrissy and all the other guests. I'm set now for the day. I've had my poetry. I'm revved up. Yes, I've got superpowers. That's the question I posed when I first started this, does poetry put you to sleep or give you superpowers? Well, I'm living proof that I've now got superpowers. So thank you very much for being on the programme, on the
Word
Cafe.
It's been a joy. Thank you.
And let's keep in touch and all the best with the pamphlet, okay?
Oh, Take care. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow, that was amazing. So I just want to really say thank you to all our guests today. And that's the lovely Tracy Gillies, who's round the corner in Totnes. I'm broadcasting from home. So, yes, I'm watching traffic and people go by. Luckily, no one's knocked on the window. So to Matt Harvey, co-presenter of the Lockdown podcast, to Edward Tripp, that's his name now. He is fab. And Robert Garland, also brilliant. So thank you for being on that programme. To Chrissy Banks, and I flagged up how to get hold of her pamphlet and book. To our lovely Robert Garland again. He's jammy, isn't he? And on finally, great thanks to Claire Morris, local poet, for being on the programme. So we are back next week at 12 o'clock on Thursday with more guests and more poetry and more exciting. But meantime, let's have a little bit of Let Her Go. See you next week. Get your nose in a poetry book, would you? I love poets. I love poets. I love poets.
Well, you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go. The bottom of your glass, hoping one day you'll make a dream last. But dreams come slow and they go so fast. You see it when you close your eyes. Maybe one day you'll understand why everything you touch surely dies. But you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go.